Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children. This is a special Mother's Day edition of Australian True Crime. It's not a paid endorsement or anything like that. It's just something special for us and we hope you'll like it too. Both Emily and I have a favourite TV show that we share with our 11-year-old daughters. And as many of you will know, the older children get, the less often that happens. So it's very special for both of us and it helps that it's hilarious. It's called Superstore and it's on Netflix in Australia. Our favourite character, literally all four of us, and I think everyone's favourite character, is the scene-stealing assistant manager, Dina Fox. Here she is in action.
Hey, Dina?
I'm in a hurry. If you want to talk, you have to walk with me.
Okay, this is going to sound crazy, but do you remember your first period? Because
February 4th, 2003. It was a Tuesday, unseasonably warm.
Okay, so
I was 19, late bloomer. I've more than made up for that since. My gyno says I ovulate like a champ. I drop eggs hard.
All right.
You know, my aunt was born with two vaginas. Yeah, she always thought it would help her date, but it didn't. She died alone. Well, she will die alone. She's still alive. She's only like 50 or something.
Okay, thanks. I think I got all the information I need.
God, I'm good at flirting.
Dina Fox is played by Canadian actress Lauren Ash. And would you believe it, Lauren has her own true crime podcast. She does it with her best friend, who also happens to be her cousin, Christy Oxborough. So this is what's happening. This week's Australian True Crime features Lauren Ash in LA, Christy Oxborough in Canada. I forgot to ask where in Canada, sorry. And Emily and I in our houses here in Australia. So it's the four of us talking true crime, our passion. I hope you enjoy it as much as we did, because sometimes it's just nice to do something you've never done before, or something you've done heaps of times before, but differently, you know?
That's so lovely.
Ashley, what a delight. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. We've never talked international crime. We're Australian true crime, so this is exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
A very special episode. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you've inspired me too, listening to your show. Lots of things you do, like putting your video on your website for listeners. I'm going to do that, Emily. That's cool.
Yeah, I think we should venture into that. I think it would be good. I think it's the thing that is done now that we don't do.
Our friend Matthew, who we work with, he is always saying to me, why aren't you doing video? And I'm like, because I edit so harshly, I'm scared. But you're not scared of anything. You just do it. And I like that. You're inspiring me.
Listen, well, bless you for saying that's very kind. And also what I will say is video killed the radio star. People want to see your mouth move. I don't know why, but they, you know what I mean? Like, it's like people want to sit and watch people talk. To me, I thought, oh, is anybody going to want these videos? They want the videos. That's what we learned. They want the videos.
Weird. All right.
Who knows? Who knows?
And I love what you do with Patreon. I love your merch. We just love what you do. So,
oh, bless. Bless it out.
Inspired. And you're actually Canadian. So is your show, you don't focus on Canadian crime though, right?
No, I don't want to even say we focus on North America. We just focus on, I guess, anything that's more currently anything that's really well known. And then we try and throw in a few that no one has heard of. But we don't have any set parameters. We're all for, you know, we know crime happens all over the place. So we're like, whatever case tickles our fancy, really.
I like it when you do, when you talk about Unsolved Mysteries, the TV show too. Like recently you did when you were just on your last night of quarantine, Christy, you were talking about the update on an Unsolved, because I love that show. I love the original show and
I love the original.
And you did the update. I was just listening to the episode and I haven't got to the end yet, so I don't even know what the update is.
Yeah, well, listen, we started the podcast specifically talking about the new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries series. That was kind of like where this all started for the two of us, even as a show. And then season two, what's a season in podcast world? Who knows? But then we kind of branched out to just famous cases, whether it's famous people or just a well-known case, that kind of thing. But those Unsolved Mysteries episodes, I mean, they are very compelling. Obviously, they choose those cases for a reason. And the Alonzo Brooks one for sure is one that it just feels like people know things. You know, it just feels like that's one that's waiting to be. They just need someone to squeal. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Preach. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, and I love that you, when you were emailing Emily mainly, but I was reading, I was like, what was that old thing that we used to say about people online who never contributed to boards, but just read them?
A lurker.
And you were talking about Australian crimes that you had heard of, and Emily was coming back about like crimes of yours that we had heard of or not, maybe. And of course, Ivan Milat was one. Of course, yeah.
This is the number one thing that our Australian listeners bring up to us, wanting us to cover, is Ivan Milat. Is that how we?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They can't get enough. They cannot get enough of the backpacker murders. And, you know, there's people who believe he was not guilty.
Or not guilty alone. That's the other one.
Yeah.
I'm in that camp, actually, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm in that camp where I think maybe he acted with someone, but I can't cop that he didn't do it. Like, no, that's not my thoughts.
Full disclosure, we don't know a lot about the case yet. And so my question, I have two questions for you. One, what era of time was this these crimes took place?
Good question, because the crimes, the victims that we know of, it's one of those. We've got that sort of canon of known victims.
He was certainly committing crimes in the 70s, but the crimes known as the backpacker murders were probably 1989 to 1993. So two backpackers were going missing. Where are they? And then the remains of these backpackers, these poor people, were found in this Belangolo State Forest, which is in New South Wales. But for a long time, you know, the parents, particularly the parents of two young Australian backpackers who a boyfriend and girlfriend who set off, they were campaigning for a long time. They were a very visible face for missing people, and then they found them. And there was two girls from England and Wales. There were some German backpackers. Just shocking. You know, if you read the details of it, it's awful.
There's still a lot of missing people whose families, particularly young women, whose families think, was it did Ivan get them, because he was working, he moved around a lot for work. And so they try and match up where he was living at that time and what he was doing for work and where they might have been.
Interesting. And then my other question is, and listen, you may not be able to answer this, but my other question is, why do you think that that's the case? Why do you think that's the one that like resonates with people so deeply? Is it the amount of victims? Is it the fact that it could have been anyone, that it was, you know, that it went on for so long? I'm just curious your take on why, again, because he is, Christy can attest, he is the name that the Australians that we listen to, that is the name that keeps getting brought up to us again and again. So I was just curious your perspective about why you think that that was the one that kind of really kind of gripped people, you know?
I think he was our first serial killer, don't you think, Emily, in terms of like the first person that we kind of put that tag to. And also back in those days, we were the destination, the final destination for backpackers. Famously, particularly European backpackers, they would leave Europe and they would backpack through Europe and down through Asia, and their parents thought Asia was the danger zone.
Oh.
That was the place that they were worried about their children backpacking through. And then when they got to Australia, which they thought of as a European culture, that's when they heaved a sigh of relief. Oh, they're safe. They're in Australia. And it wasn't the safe place anymore. And the murders themselves were horrific. Mm. They were tortured, these kids.
Fascinating.
The vastness of Australia, I think it plays into that outback story about people backpacking.
Him knowing that environment and you not knowing it.
Yeah, because... Mm. And he, yeah. And just the fact that back then, obviously, we didn't have social media or Facebook, so people were... Families were relying on letters. I know when I first moved to the UK, I lived in London for a long time, I'd write letters or I'd be calling once a week. Well, these families were like, oh, they haven't called. They were, a lot of the times they only found out their loved ones were missing was they were meant to come home and they just didn't arrive. It's like, where are they, you know?
What so, about that one girl, the German girl, whose mum arrived at the airport? Like she was coming to visit her and she didn't pick her up at the airport. That's how she first raised the alarm.
Oh God.
But
awful.
It was certainly the way he, I know for me, just that real shock having like reread stuff about the crimes, the way he would basically disable them so they could not run, they could not move, but they were kind of aware. He was brutal. He gave his girlfriend this Benetton top that became quite topical in the case. She'd been photographed in this distinctive Benetton windcheater, like sweater, and one of the girls from the UK, that was her sweater.
And they found all their camping gear in his garage. Again, these were all sort of, at the time, quite new tropes. We didn't really know about that keeping of trophies. So when they raided his home and there were the photographs of the police coming out of his garage with their camping gear, with their drink bottles, with their names etched in them. It was like, I'm getting chills thinking about it now. We didn't know that that was a thing back then. Profiling serial killers was still a newish thing, and it was the first time that the Australian Federal Police brought out a profiler from the States, from the FBI, and worked closely with him, and they built a profile and all of that stuff too. So a lot of firsts.
Right.
Yeah, and that... There was a backpacker in particular. You always remember his name. His name was Paul Onions. He was British. And he actually had a near-death experience with Ivan Milat. He got picked up by him in his truck or his van and was in the car, and in the vehicle, and Ivan Milat, you know, got a gun out or a knife. And this guy's like, what? And he literally fell out of the car on the road, and he was picked up by a nurse. And his witness statement actually sat in a pile. So this is before forces were like, you know, sharing information. So his witness statement about Ivan Milat sat in this paper pile for months and months and just wasn't connected. So, and he gave evidence at the court case, and his life's been completely like traumatized by his experience. But yeah, the police just weren't connecting statements and everything.
Also, his statement was fascinating because he was able to speak to how you can be, you know, lured into a car by somebody like that. We talk a lot about this idea that this monster doesn't exist, you know. Women don't go towards, aren't attracted towards men who look like monsters. You know, if you look like a monster and you behave like a monster, you don't attract victims, children or women. You have to be charming. At the very least, you have to look reasonable. You have to behave reasonably initially to get near victims, you know. And so Ivan was that. And this Paul Onions testified to that. He said, you know, initially he was everything you expect an Australian man to be when he was hitchhiking. And it was a very popular patch to hitchhike. It was near, was it a train station outside of Sydney where...
On the highway, the big highway in New South Wales.
They'd get the train to the last station and then they'd go across the road and they'd hitchhike up the highway. So he knew that's where they would be. And he'd pull over and he was a very Aussie larrikin, the kind of guy, like Crocodile Dundee kind of guy. Funny, charming, telling jokes, chuck your bag in the back, jump in, heaps of fun. And then all of a sudden, he'd flick a switch. And Paul Onions said, his face changed, his eyes changed, his voice changed. Suddenly, he was just a different person and he knew he was in trouble. He suddenly realised he was in trouble. He was terrified. And so that was really valuable testimony for so many reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great point. I don't know that there are any successful serial killers who lured their victims by saying, get in the car so I can brutalize you, right? Like, it's like, that doesn't, there's always a get. There's always that, the charisma, you know, there's the Jeffrey Dahmers. There's a way that they're able to pull it off. It's a really great point. It's a really great thing to keep in mind. I think people forget sometimes, for sure.
Yeah.
Ted Bundy.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh. Victims. We spoke to a lady last week who was sexually assaulted in a park by a stranger, and she kept saying, oh, I'm so stupid, I feel so stupid because he's young and now I realise he's really dumb and I was duped by an idiot. And she was like so hard on herself, you know, and we were saying, mate, of course he's young and all of that. He had a knife, by the way. Like, you know, of course he was all those things because you wouldn't have helped him find his wallet or whatever he reckoned he'd lost if he was a big, scary guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she felt sorry for him. She's like, yeah, I'll help you find your wallet in a dark park at nighttime.
And we're conditioned to be nice as women. We're conditioned to be helpful and nice and, you know, always assessing situations.
You have to be a certain type to get people to lower their defenses.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's been many times in my life where I've gotten out of a situation and gone, what just happened? What did I just do for the last hour of my life? Why did I get in that vehicle? Or why did I, you know, why did I make that? Why did I go to that party where I didn't know anybody? You know what I mean? Like, I think it's very easy in life to make those choices in the moment. And it, luckily for me, I got out of all of them. But it is, I think, a lot easier to all of a sudden find yourself in a situation based on your good nature, based on our upbringing from birth as women to be polite, to put on a smile, to don't be loud, don't cause a fuss. And yes, I listened to that episode and it broke my heart listening to her say those things because I was like, it's also what we're programmed to do as women is to, you know, find the reason, find what you did wrong. What did I do to cause this? Where it's like, yeah. Well, kind of nothing. He was kind of a predator that preyed on you. That's what happened. You were in the wrong place at the wrong time, which was not your fault. You know what I mean? And I think her listening to her speak, it did speak to me in that grander sense about how we're programmed as women and how even in those situations you can still try and go, well, what did I do? What did I do wrong? When in reality, it's like, you know, we find ourselves in those positions all the time. It's not our fault. Obviously.
Yeah. There's only one person responsible. 100%. That's what we always say. There's only one person responsible, and that's the offender. I love about your podcast, too, that it always starts jovial, you know, like, and my co-hostess with the mostest, and what are you drinking over there, and all that kind of stuff. But it's still very sensitive to victims, and, you know, you're still very sensitive about, when you talked about the Delphi, is that how we say it, Delphi?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another one that I'm just obsessed with. And
yeah, you are, Michelle. You're really into that one.
Yeah. And I love the way you always place yourselves at the ages of victims as well, which I'd never thought of before. And you talked about who you were at the age, when you were the age of those teenagers, what you were up to. I thought that's a really interesting way of, because we're always trying to humanize victims and always trying to really make sure we're considering them and who they were as people. That was a really interesting thing to do. I like that a lot.
In February 2017, teenagers Abby Williams and Libby German were walking the High Bridge Trail near Delphi, Indiana, when they vanished. 22 hours later, their bodies were found less than 1 mile from their last known location. Police found a recording on Libby's cell phone of the possible murderer. Yet despite having both audio and video of a suspect, the case remains unsolved. So who did Abby and Libby run into on the trail? Was it a drifter who saw a crime of opportunity? A Delphi resident who had been following them? Or maybe a familiar face that one of the families is trying to hide? They were 13 and 14 at the times of their deaths, right?
They were, yeah.
When you think about those details, I'm like, where were we? What were we doing when we were 13 and 14? Of course, these two young ladies were walking in the woods, unfortunately, at the time of their disappearance slash murders. And I was trying to think, you know, I was like, is that young to be in the forest? Like, we were trying to think of context from our own lives, which made us remember that when we were those exact ages, you were 14 and I was 13, we did get dropped off at a public pool for a day.
Yeah.
And I will say, I remember vividly feeling free in a way that I'd never felt before and terrified that there was no sort of supervision.
Yeah. I think we got dropped off with like maybe just enough money to pay to get in.
Yes.
And then it was like, well, there you go. And I don't think up to that point I had ever done anything where it was like, here's money, go do whatever you want. So it was a real trip.
It was.
Is what it was. Yeah.
That one really affected me too. Talking about those two girls and thinking about Christy and I when we were that age. I know that one affected me. Which was that one the worst for you, Christy, or were the other child ones worse for you?
JonBenet
was the worst for you.
She was the worst one because I, during my research, came across photos from her autopsy that I did not want to find. I did not go looking for them. They just came up, and they're still there. If I close my eyes, I can still see them. And I mean, she was like 5, 6 at the time, and I have a 5-year-old. And so it's so hard to not put yourself in that place of like, I have children this age. Can you imagine how you would have reacted in this case? And I mean, the answer is I would have fallen apart. So I can't even imagine. But the younger the victim, the harder it is.
That's interesting too, because JonBenet has become so, I feel like everyone's become so disassociated from JonBenet. It's like, forgotten that she was a real child and that's a real family. They're not characters. It's not a TV show. So yeah, it's interesting that you raised that one, and that material like that is, I assume, on the internet, right? You've just accidentally.
Yeah. I think I was looking up something because I wanted to read the autopsy report. I didn't expect photos, and it just automatically came up, and I was like, nope, that's not what I was looking for. I just want the words. I don't need to see it as it is, but it's why every time we post a case, I always post a photo of the victim. And it's why I specifically went looking for a photo of her that was not her as a pageant girl. Because every time they talk to JonBenet, they're like, well, she was this pageant queen. She should not have been in these pageants. I'm like, it was not about the pageants. She was a child. She was a little girl. And I really wanted to focus on that. So that's why the photo we chose to post is just showing she was a little girl, which to me makes it that much more tragic, because everyone focuses on beauty queen and pageants and saying how she was way older than you would think. And it's like, no, at the end of the day, she was like a 5-year-old girl. So we got to remember that part, because yeah, they seem like characters in a show, because she was on TV, she was on magazines, she was everywhere, but she was just a little kid.
I've lost a bit of touch with like what happened in the end, but I know Patsy, her mother, passed away, didn't she, of cancer? And
then they did the documentary not too long ago where the forensic pathologist, who's excellent, I can't remember his name, but suggested that her brother killed her with the torch. And then I spoke to her dad after that, remember? And they were suing the producers. So it's kind of ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to stop until someone just outright admits to it. I mean, I saw that one where they were talking about, you know, they felt it was the flashlight, and while they felt like it fit, there was also a baseball bat that belonged to Burke that was found in the front yard that had fibers from the carpet from the basement where she was found. But it's like, but nobody focuses on that.
And we also know that he had hit her with a golf club the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're alleging anything. We're not alleging anything.
Nope.
Burke has lots of lawyers, so we're not alleging anything, but
mm-hmm.
just saying.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a link in the show notes of this episode to True Crime and Cocktails, so you can subscribe. There's also links for you to come along and see Emily and I live with our special guest, Australia's longest-serving homicide detective, Roland Legg. We'll be answering your questions live on stage. We're at the Karolika Theatre in Ringwood on May 28, the Yarraville Club on June 12, and then we'll be coming to wherever you are soon after that.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Before recording this special edition of Australian True Crime with Lauren Ash and Christy Oxborough, from True Crime and Cocktails, we ended up in a lengthy email conversation about true crime, of course. Among the topics covered was the cases that inspired our earliest interest in the genre. We found we had a number of cases in common, including the notorious matter of Carla Homolka and her husband Paul Bernardo. The Canadian couple raped and killed at least two minors together between 1990 and 1992. They also drugged and raped Carla's 15-year-old sister, Tammy Homolka, after a family Christmas party. Tammy died that night, but the coroner found she choked on her own vomit, making it officially an accident. Carla's defence team negotiated a plea bargain on her behalf, which saw her convicted of manslaughter in the rape and murder of the other two girls. As part of the deal, she gave evidence against her husband, Paul, who was found guilty of first-degree murder in both cases, and Carla served just 12 years in prison.
Yeah, this is obviously both of us growing up in Canada. I can definitely pinpoint my true crime interest being Unsolved Mysteries when I was too young to be watching it, and the Carla Homolka, Paul Bernardo case. And I was pretty young when that was all happening. And what was interesting was at the time, as it was happening in real time, the court case and stuff like that, there was a media ban in Canada. So there was not a lot of news coverage about the case. And so I remember my friends at school, this is what also is so bizarre. My friends at school would be like, my parents, they have friends in America and they've been mailing us the newspapers because American news was covering the case. Cause of course it was very salacious. But now in retrospect, like how weird is that? That it was like, hey, you want to know more about those serial killers? Here you go. I'll mail you the articles. Like, Ah,
we have that here a bit from state to state, actually. We had a big gangster trial here in Australia that you couldn't report in Victoria, but you could in
I guess
states.
I just feel like if it was an email situation, which didn't exist at the time, email is one thing, but going to the trouble of, like, you know, packaging up a newspaper, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, long of the short of it, Paul Bernardo, of course, and Carla Homolka, they were like the Ken and Barbie killers was one of the nicknames they were given.
So
very
gorgeous.
Attractive.
I still remember that photo of them in there by the swimming pool. I mean, they were so beautiful.
And to your earlier point about luring victims, you know, they were a couple. They were very young, very attractive. They would, you know, pull their car over asking for directions from young women and then get them in the car, chloroform them, and then do crazy sadistic things. Sometimes they would kill them. I know that one of the victims, of course, unfortunately, was Carla's blood sister, but they did not, I believe, have the intention to kill her, but she did unfortunately choke on her own vomit and died as a kind of side effect of the drugging. Now, what's fascinating about all of it was prior to those murders, there was a string of rapes outside Toronto in a suburb called Scarborough. And so it was the Scarborough rapist was kind of known as this terrorizing force who was, you know, it was a huge deal and they never caught him. And now they do believe that that was Paul Bernardo probably before he started dating and then married Carla Homolka, which is also so crazy to think about. Then he diversified and brought his wife in on the family business. But when they got married and started all of this and then eventually got caught, she actually signed a plea deal with the courts. And it was through that plea deal that she alerted them to where there would be more evidence. And some of the evidence included videotape of the crimes, which when police viewed those tapes, they realized Carla was not the victim that she has been made out to be, and that she was definitely a very involved participant in many ways. But at that time, because they had made this deal, they stuck to the deal and they did not charge her further. I don't know the ins and outs of law. So to me, I was like, that seemed odd that you couldn't then say, but wait a minute, now we're seeing that you were very, very involved in this. But anyway, so long story short, she is out of prison. She's been out of prison for years. She's been out of prison probably for, I want to say, 16 or 17 years now. And that has always fascinated me. He, of course, is still in prison in Canada, but she has children and she has moved, I think, to Europe now and is living her life. And I always thought, like, it wouldn't, like, what is going to happen? Like, what happens when those children grow up and find out who their mother was, if ever? But imagine that.
You know what's interesting, though, is I wonder, I feel like so much has changed in terms of the way we view grooming and all of those things, the way we view the psychology of victimhood. I wonder if maybe we would think of Carla as a victim now.
That's a great question. That's a great point. Yeah, it's an interesting debate because... It's an interesting debate because there was definitely it was very clear that she was a victim. Then I remember the tapes came out and then it was made to be very clear that she wasn't, that she was definitely into it. But to your point, that's a huge gray area. What does that look like? How much was she involved or not? What was the precursor to that? What was their relationship like prior? That's a really great, that's a really interesting point. And I agree with you. I don't want to view the tapes, but I would be curious to know, you're right. Why was that delineation made and would it still be made today? It's a great, great question.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying Carla wasn't maybe groomed, but the thing that particularly sticks out for me about Carla Homolka is the reason that she gave for them assaulting her own sister, who was only 15 at the time, was that she knew that Paul was disappointed that when they met, Carla was not a virgin. And I found that wildly fascinating because it's like, first of all, neither was he. It was like, oh, I've disappointed him because I'm not so pure. So her quote was, I gave him my sister's virginity for Christmas.
It was on Christmas, yeah.
Yeah. And also after she died, Carla put on her sister's clothes so they could act out more because they weren't done with her. She died before they were finished.
There was a Law and Order episode that loosely was based on that. I always remember it because I rewatched Law and Order during COVID.
Yeah.
And I think the lady out of Grey's Anatomy, Ellen Pompeo,
yeah.
She played like a Carla character. And I remember, yeah, it alluded to the fact that she was way more involved in the end. I keep thinking, imagine if Carla, like her kids invited your kids over to a play date.
That's an interesting point too, because in Australia, of course, we have a sex offenders registry. You had the same in the States, yep. And you would have the same in Canada.
Yep. Yeah.
That you would have to, we would have to be aware of that. That is interesting that you can move to Europe and your yes. neighbours, your kids, friends, parents don't have to know your background.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel wild to think about, you know, that to your point that there's no crossover. Like, you know, what's the law there? Like, I can just move to another country and my criminal record just doesn't follow me. And it involves the murder of one victim that was underage. So that's technically a child sex crime. You know what I mean? So that feels odd that it's you can just get on a plane and I mean, terrifying to, again, lock your doors. You don't know your neighbors, but you know what I mean? Like it is interesting to think about, oh, so she just changed her name, changed her identity, moved to another country. And then she has no sort of paper trail. I mean, again, and she did the crimes, you know, and I agree with you. It's an interesting debate about why, but she is technically a convicted sex offender. So it is interesting that she would potentially, does she have to disclose that in France or wherever it is she's living? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm very open-minded about whether or not she was groomed up to the point before my kids go for a sleepover at a house. Right up to that point.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. I know, I hear you. Yeah. I think it's a great point, though. I think you're right, because I think that it's a great point to bring up, because I think that I'm remembering this from the time, and things have changed and all of that, and the ways that we understand that these kind of crimes are happening. But then Christy also brings up a good point. I forgot about that quote, which was chilling.
Someone tracked her down, I think, didn't they? A journalist tracked her down and actually wrote a book or an article, didn't they, a few years ago, I think, and had photos, and they're like, oh, look at her. She's living the life. She's got her kid. She's married, you know.
She also only, they found out about the sister because when the sister first died, the coroner was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, it was an accident. Choked on her own vomit. And it's like, well, they obviously didn't do any sort of full exam, because they would have found out she had been assaulted. But they ended up exhuming her body like 2 weeks after Carla got sentenced. They only added 2 years to her sentence for her sister's murder, which I find amazing. And now I'm learning, maybe just background check the parents of any kids that are friends with your kids.
just do a quick
background check just to make sure you know where your kids are going. That's all. That seems fine, right?
I don't know how my mother ever let me leave the house.
Do you guys do? I suppose you don't live in the same city normally. You're never in the same city. I was going to ask if you ever do any live events or anything like that. Do you ever do any Zooms or anything?
You've been doing them over Zoom?
No. We actually did a live cast when locked down and everything. But prior to that, and pretty soon, we do live shows, and they're super fun. And we sit on stage with a retired homicide detective, and we talk about cases they've done, and then we ask the audience ask them questions and all of that. It's great.
Oh, I love that.
We're doing a few, and one of them's in the suburb where I grew up. So a lot of my mates are going, yeah, I'm coming along.
Awesome. Good for you. I love it.
And there's also very localized crimes to those areas that are going to be really interesting to talk about.
That's so cool. We definitely have had a lot of people talking to us about wanting live shows and stuff like that. We obviously, with the COVID of it all, that is, we haven't done anything yet. We've also had people talking to us about live shows like on the internet. And I'm like, yes, but I don't know. Then I'm like, we just figured out how to like run a podcast. Like, now I have to figure out how to stage manage a live Zoom show. I mean, like, give me a couple weeks to research, you know?
Yeah, but I guess it's just like this. And then you can just be talking to them in real time. And then we've done a few like this, and they're just, you know, typing questions up the side. That's fun and easy. But I find that the homicide detectives are great because they just don't get much kudos, you know, throughout their career. They get a lot of criticism. They get the media constantly saying, why haven't you found that guy? What, you know, what's the problem? And they get a lot of pressure. But then when they retire, they're finally allowed to talk, just say whatever they want, what they really think. And
they talk.
So they love
and
it.
They talk.
They do love to talk. Yeah.
Well, that's why I really loved the Night Stalker documentary on Netflix. I don't know if you've watched it, but I really loved that it was letting the police kind of really tell the story about what the kind of timeline was of how they approached the case, how they solved the case, The involvement of Dianne Feinstein for anyone who lives in America is also fascinating because she, of course, is a longtime California senator now. But hearing about how she was the mayor of San Francisco at the time and that she really, really kind of screwed them over in the terms of how they were trying to run the case. And then she went public before they wanted them to. That was fascinating. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really interesting because I think a lot of the true crime we consume, or I consume anyway, you'll hear from detectives, you'll hear from law enforcement that was involved and stuff, but never have I seen something that was really focused, that it was like the focus of this documentary is having them tell the story. And I thought that was really interesting.
And it is, isn't it, the politics, the way politics intersects with investigation and funding and those basic things is so interesting. And unfortunately, we don't hear about it at the time. But when we hear about it in retrospect, I've just finished writing a book. And actually, Christy, it's about the forensic pathologists and the autopsies and stuff. Hearing about this one case in particular was a serial killer here in Melbourne, in Frankston. And about after the second murder, the police and the community were saying, we've got a serial killer, but the government wouldn't admit it because that was so much extra funding required. All of a sudden, you know, it wasn't until the third murder, okay, suddenly lots of extra police, helicopters and HQ set up there at the school and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, not wanting to admit it, not wanting the media to use that term, not allowing the police to use that term in press conferences and all of that, because that equates to dollars, using that term.
Yeah, and you know, what's also interesting is that at the exact same time of the Night Stalker, while the thick of that case was happening, there was another serial killer in Los Angeles who later got dubbed the Grim Sleeper, which is featured on the May 11th episode of our show.
I've never heard of the Grim Sleeper.
Thank you very much. Neither had I, and I'll tell you why.
Oh.
And we definitely get into it on the show, but... So Richard Ramirez, he was targeting, you know, the Night Stalker was targeting kind of middle to upper class neighborhoods. Police was going crazy. There was another serial killer that was killing at the exact same time, but he lived in South Central L.A., which is a very kind of developing, for lack of a better term, poor community. And
African-American, Hispanic community.
Yes, and he was targeting sex workers. This was also starting in the height of the crack epidemic, which was huge in Los Angeles. And so a lot of the sex workers were also addicts. And the murders, it was clear that there was a serial killer because there was a string that same MO. And it literally took them 20 years before they even announced that there was a serial killer. The victims' families did not even know that there was a serial killer who was on the loose. And then the other quick aside is there was a third serial killer who was operating at that time called the Southside Strangler. But then it was determined that that was actually multiple men who had the exact same MO, and they mistook it for being one serial killer when it was just a bunch of guys, unfortunately, murdering sex workers, addicts in the exact same way. And to your point, it was, of course, in an area that was, you know, has a very high crime rate, did not necessarily have the manpower and was not going to get more funding for more manpower. And there just wasn't the same kind of concern given when it was, you know, there was even a quote that an activist at the time was given from the police that was, oh, he's only killing prostitutes, so why do you care? And it's like, well, there's a lot of reasons that we care, you know, so it's crazy.
But that's still the case. Yeah, we talk about that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so it's crazy to think about also the fact that there was so much murder going on in that span of time, that there was the Night Stalker, that there was this Grim Sleeper who they think killed, you know, over 100 women. He was convicted of 10 and one attempted, but they think it's possible that it was over 100 because he worked for the sanitation department. Anyway, and then, of course, there was these other serial killers, and I would call them serial killers. If they were killing more than one woman each, that qualifies you. It's just crazy to think about that it was such an epidemic at that time of all of these killings of women. Now, again, Richard Ramirez would go. He didn't have an MO. He was killing everybody. But all of these women being killed at the same time, it's wild to think about. It's really overwhelming.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. We still have an epidemic in Australia of domestic violence, of women being killed at a rate of approximately once a week by a partner or former partner. That's ongoing. I don't know what your stats are in the States and Canada.
I'm not sure what the stats are either. I think it's actually quite high as well. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but I do know that that is something that, again, there's lots of focus on. How do we handle this? What do we do? What can we do to get ahead of it? Those kinds of thoughts. But that is another kind of overwhelming thing to think about. And that, of course, I don't know if you've watched that another documentary on Netflix, that The Murder Next Door, and it was all through found footage. The documentary,
The Murder Next Door, the Watts family. Oh my gosh, the footage was incredible, wasn't it? Of him, of the man in the lounge room, and the neighbor saying, "There's something not right. There's something not right. I'm telling you." Saying to the police when he walked out the door. That was extraordinary, the vision that they had in that documentary.
That's another example to me, you know, of someone, of how pervasive domestic violence is and how pervasive abuse is and what it can look like, and that it can affect absolutely anybody. People think that people have perception about what, especially I think, emotional abuse looks like. Or you know, it's like that only happens to blank, whatever someone's perception is of a woman that could be, you know, targeted in those ways. And I think that documentary was great in opening the eyes of the fact that it could be literally anybody. You could be your next door neighbors that look beautiful and happy and have this wonderful life. You don't actually know what's going on behind closed doors. And it's such an epidemic, and it's overwhelming to think about where do you begin to try and unravel how to prevent that.
Gosh, okay, what other episodes do you have coming up? I love your show. It's so great to discover a new podcast, isn't it? Particularly a new true crime podcast, because you think, oh God, I've got them all. I'm up to date with everything. What else? There's got to be something else. And then you discover a new show. And I was like, no way. Dina from Superstore does a true crime podcast? That's crazy.
I know.
I know, right?
It's wild. It's wild.
Well, I know it is, and it's a really great one.
Thank you so much. Christy, what do we have coming up? I ask you every other day, what's the calendar? What are we researching?
Same. We're the same.
Right now, I am knee-deep in Natalie Holloway.
That's right.
Oh, yes. Now, here's a weird connection. Didn't her mum marry JonBenet Ramsey's dad?
They just dated.
Oh,
but
and they're not together anymore?
6 months after Patsy Ramsey died.
6 months after?
6 months.
Men do that, babe. Men do that. Widowers do that. They suddenly get hungry and they need... They got no clean shirt.
They need a meal. Yeah. They need a hot meal.
Yeah. Oh, I've already told my husband, once I'm gone, you're just alone for life. So you're welcome.
But he'll have moved in with a lady down the street. He'll be hungry. She'll find him in the street in his underpants, banging at a saucepan, and she'll say, get in here.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't judge him.
Help it out. Help us out.
Okay.
Yes, Natalie Holloway's next. We also have started, we're going to start doing every few episodes a serial killer series where I research serial killers, because I really have an odd fascination with the serial killers specifically. I know, it's really odd.
Christy, your research is impeccable. Like, I was looking at the stuff you put online. I was like, wow, it's something to aspire to. Like, I get lost in reading stuff, but then I've got to translate it to actually doing something useful with it. I just sort of go from one thing to one thing, but it's just impeccable the way it's presented, and I love it. I just, much respect to you.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I don't have free time anymore. I don't really know what that is. I barely know what my children look like. It's just once you get into something, and before you know it, you find something else, and then you find something else, and there's just no end point. So you just keep going and going and going, and then you have to take like 100 page of notes and whittle it down to only like 20 to 40 pages to be able to do an episode. And our episodes are already pushing it at length as it is. So we have to cut it at some point, but it's hard to try and make sure you find what you're going to keep in there and what you're willing to get rid of, what's just not something you're going to bring up. So it's a tough game.
I love it. I love it so much. Thank you for doing this show with us.
Thank you for having us.
A ball. Just a joy. Just a ball.
Well, let's do it again.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's been,
I know,
amazing. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to connect with you and Will.
Exactly. Shared relevant interests. I love it.
Thank you to patrons Jessica Carty, Lucille, Mandy, Beck Sutton, Melissa Spears, Mrs. Wag, Nicole Drage, Resley Buchel, Susan Werner, and Lisa Godfrey. Thank you to our guests, Lauren Ash and Christy Oxborough, and thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back and back to normal next week.
This has been another Smartfella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.